Welcome to the Drama Teacher Podcast, brought to you by Theater Folk, the Drama Teacher Resource Company. I'm Lindsay Price. Hello. I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. This is episode 186, and you can find any links to this episode in the show notes, which are at theaterfolk.com/episode186. 186. There we go. 186. Okay. So today we have another production case study, and I really enjoy recording these. And I hope that they're useful for you as well. That's kind of the point. I hope they accomplish that point. I think it's good to hear how directors choose a play, approach a play, make decisions, create a vision, and then execute on that vision. Creating a vision and executing a vision, that's such a big part of a director's job. And I think our guest today is a great example of creation and execution. So let's get to it. So I am here talking with Kelly Connors. Hello, Kelly.
Hello, Lindsay.
Hello. So first off, can you tell everybody where in the world you are?
I am located in North Berwick, Maine, which is one of the several places that I teach and run a theater program.
Yes, you wear many hats. So I know you, and we've been in contact because you did a production of one of my plays, Look Me in the Eye, and that's sort of what we're going to talk about today, just sort of do a case study on vision and the visualization of vision. But you don't work in a traditional sense, but you work in a lot of different areas in drama and education.
I do. I'm a freelance theater artist, and I work in a charter school that the model that they work on hires people from the working artist world to teach their arts, visual arts programs, their performing arts programs, their music programs. And I also work in a gifted and talented program in the Maine school system. And every school in the state of Maine is supposed to have a gifted and talented program. So the function that I have in that particular school is called the Theater Excel Arts Program. And I teach theater grades 6 through 12 for a certain amount of weeks out of the year. And I'm also employed as an independent contractor at the high school as their theater director, their artistic director of the theater program.
That's a lot. Like, do you enjoy the multifacetedness of that?
You know, it's interesting. You should ask me that. I called a friend yesterday or 2 days ago in a meltdown state saying, I've got 12 jobs and my worlds are all colliding. And I'm not sure how to keep all of this straight. And sometimes it's overwhelming. The upside of doing a lot of different work, and I work in the professional world as well. I'm in the process of costuming a show. So the upside of that is that I don't have to go into an office and punch somebody's time clock. And that is refreshing and wonderful to me. And it allows my brain to continually gyrate in the creative areas, which is what feeds my soul. The downside of that is, as I said, sometimes all of those schedules in my worlds collide and I just feel like I need to throw the whole thing up in the air and see where all the pieces land and hope to be able to put them in some semblance of order to continue with my schedule.
Yeah, you must be in 6 places at once. Go.
Absolutely. My husband asks me things like, oh, do you still live here? So that's kind of my world.
Yeah. When you do your own thing, that balance is tricky because it's you're right, eh? It's the best thing to be able to sort of put your own process together about being creative and how you're going to put that creativity out into the world. And it's like, oh boy, sometimes I would really like to punch that clock.
Sometimes I'd like to bag groceries. Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Well, I've been there. It's like, oh, you mean at 5 o'clock you just go home? What is that?
Exactly.
So what is it about teaching and the act of the teaching theater to youth that that strikes you? Why that?
Well, they're sponges. They want to learn. There's nothing that actually frustrates me more than a student who signs up for a class and is there because they think they're going to get an easy A. I'm there to teach you. I'm there to help you grow. I'm there to open your eyes, to open your soul, to open your heart, to make you look at the world in a different way, to challenge you, to look at these wonderful scripts that we have available to us and what that all means and what that speaks volumes to the world through these, you know, through these plays, and let's explore that together. And if someone doesn't want to explore and play, my inner frustration is tremendous.
Oh, I know. Now I hear. I'm always amazed. I'm always amazed at the ability of some drama teachers who have classes who have filled with students who don't want to be there. And maybe don't have a choice. In some schools, you know, they don't have a choice to be there, and that they're okay with that. Like they're gonna fight through that frustration to find
right,
it.
Right.
That was never my bag.
No, me either. And it's one of the reasons why working in the Theater Excel, the Gifted and Talented program, those kids are only there because they've been identified. We identify 5% of the population, and that's what the state of Maine will pay for, is that 5%. So once they're identified, they're there because they want to be there. They're missing class to be with me. So, you know, they're pulled out of a class, not the same class every week, but they're pulled out of a class, so they have a huge commitment to wanting to be there. And those kids just, you know, soak it up.
Yeah.
Like I'm putting candy in front of them. They'll just eat it right up. They love it.
Oh, that's so awesome.
It is awesome. I'm lucky.
Do you remember when you first knew that teaching was an avenue that you wanted to pursue? Because you have a lot of hats, but it just seems like that there's a big chunk of it that's devoted to teaching.
I think that when you direct a show with professionals or with anybody, that there is a certain amount of teaching that happens for your actors and for yourself. One of the best things I did was begin to direct. It made me a better communicator, and it made me a better actor. And that was so exciting to me. It was like somebody suddenly opened a world of doors that I walked inside, and there were so many doors, I couldn't open them all because I was so excited. So I think that the passion for disseminating information, for teaching, for sharing knowledge has always been with me. And I just sort of honed in on taking these groups of students that wanted to be better. And I just sort of fell into that situation, and it became a real passion.
Yeah. Let's move to Look Me in the Eye. So, talking about directing and choosing of scripts, what was it about this script that spoke to you as a director?
I looked at this script last year when I was taking a team to the One Act Festival in New Hampshire. It was a Christian academy that I was directing at the time. And I looked at a bunch of different scripts, and I loved this script, but I didn't feel like it was the right thing for this particular group of people. So when I had a chance to direct a one-act play this year to take to festival in Maine, I didn't even have to look for one. I knew this is what I was going to do. I love plays that speak to students that are the same age as the characters, because it gives them an automatic in. They have an automatic road to understanding that character's journey because they're at least the same age. They're not trying to take on too much on their plate at one time. of playing somebody who's 30 years old with, you know, 30 years of life experience that they have 16 years of life experience. So I sort of gravitate toward plays for high schoolers that have that, you know, that age range in common.
Yeah, that's always been, well, as a playwright and as a company, that's always been our MO. It's because we always, and sometimes we get like we get submissions and the playwright and we say, well, no, this is all adults. We're not, this isn't our thing. And we get more often than not a snotty letter back that says, well, I believe that high school students can play any age. And I'm like, okay, well, that there's companies over there and over there that you can do that at.
Right.
Our belief is find the challenge within the age, you know, like there's lots of ways that you can challenge a high school student other than making them play 60.
Right. When you break down a script and when you analyze a script and when you really understand what goes into building a character, there is so much there for a high school student. It's overwhelming. So to add, hey, let's add 30 years to your life experience now and ask you to understand that as well, I just think is a really, it's an uphill. That's an uphill battle. I think I'm asking students to climb a mountain that's insurmountable for them.
Yeah, I agree. We're on the same page on that one. Okay, so you've got your script, and then so what was the theme or the vision that you wanted to communicate to your actors and to your audience?
So I love, well, if I had to encapsulate, you know, and I talked with the actors a lot about this. If we had to choose a word for the show, and you only get one word, you know, and we did this as a quick, like, sort of lightning round. Let's read the play. Okay, one word impression, one word impression, one word impression. A lot of people came back with the word control. And I agree with that because there's lots of control in the show. Self-control, government control, there's just lots of control in the show. And there was something about that dystopian society that just really appealed to me. I loved 1984 by George Orwell when I was growing up, so maybe it's a little bit of that leftover, but there was something tremendously appealing about that. And we all deal with this sense of lack of control in our lives. I don't know how many times during the day I say to myself, okay, that's in my circle of concern, but it's out of my circle of control.
I love that. I love that circle of, it's the Venn diagram, right? Circle of concern.
Exactly. Circle of concern, circle of control. And I felt like that literally just 2 days ago, trying to make out the FAFSA for my daughter. I wanted to cry.
Yeah.
You know, so there's lots of things in everybody's life. So I felt like my students could relate to that very deeply. So we went with that, and we were very excited about going with that. The kids loved the script from the word go. I was very lucky that we used this model at school this year. So we created a black box. We put a black box on our stage, put the audience on our stage as well, drew the main rag, and performed with the actors facing stage right and the audience facing stage left. So we had this wonderful little black box that we set up, and our model for it was 3 one-act plays. And I knew that one of the plays would be the one I would direct, and it would be the one going to the one-act festival. So I chose this play, and I was lucky enough that when we sat down at the casting table, I said, you know what, I'm the play that's going to festival. These are the actors I want. So I was able to hand pick my actors, and they're exceedingly strong.
Yeah.
So that made my job easier and meant that we were going to open up, I was going to open up a great dialogue with these people about, hey, what is this show? What are we doing? What do we want to say? Where do we want to go? So we were very process oriented, and it was something that they had never been able to do before. When we do a huge musical at the school, there's only so much time in 10 weeks, let's face it. With choreography and music and, you know, scene work, there's only so much time. So I got to really dig deep with these actors, and that was exciting for all of us, actually.
Oh, well, of course. Like, just to have an opportunity to take on the process of thematic development and character development, you know, beyond this is where you were going, this is where you're going to stand.
Exactly.
I really like, I just want to hone in on this too, because I think that, just because I think visual, because we're going to get into the, your visuals in a second, but how about visualization is so important, particularly for, high school students these days. I really like that exercise of choose one word, you know, so that instead of being overwhelmed by what's happening in the text, what's the one word that this play means to you? Because then you can always come back to that one word. It's like, how do you visualize control? You know, what does your character think of control? What does that character think of control?
Exactly. And it's what I used actually to build the set and the costumes on, was that idea of control.
Fantastic. Well, let's get right into that. Nice segue. Well, and what, so there's going to be pictures. There's pictures of the set in the show notes for everyone watching so that you can look as we discuss. And the thing that struck me, first of all, was the very much futuristic aspect of the futuristic choice. Most of the times when I see this play done, it's in the future that's just like a little bit ahead or a little bit to the left of center, so that the teens are very much in costumes that are very recognizable. And you chose to kind of take it further and also make it very thematic. It's very clear that there's this notion of control. So talk to me about your, let's start with the costumes, since that's what I was talking about. Talk about your decision process with the costumes.
So one of the, I don't know if you remember that we wrote you early on, and you talked about how it was important to include color for each character, that color was, and you talked about if the offense officers were in color, that it needed to be gray. So we took that and kind of ran with it. And we talked about what are the overriding characteristics of each of these people and how does that translate into color. So color was what we started with. Then we started to talk about status and control and who was closer to the system than other people, which is how we, I'm going to veer off for just a second, which is how we developed those boxes to stand on and how many stripes each box had and what that meant for status.
And I just want to, if I'm just going to interject also and say, because we haven't said this, so Look Me in the Eye is a futuristic play that asks the what if question, is what if students had to for 1 week or for a period of time every year observe executions, and that it was something that was put in by the society at large to encourage obedience, and what happens when you are obedient and what happens when you start to question the system and so on and so forth. Okay.
Right. So once we talked about color, then we talked about silhouette and shape. So one of the reasons we went for a kind of a, we started with sort of a military look, which is what Rule is designed on, is that look of up there, you know, supporting the system at all costs. So we decided that everybody would have a little bit of a military look in their clothing. So that meant that we weren't dealing with things that were flowy. We were dealing with fabrics that had some body and stiffness to them. Fee, being fearful, we decided, and we got permission from you to make her a female. So we decided at the bottom of her dress that it would come out a little bit, that flirty kind of a bottom, which would give us more of a youthful feeling for her. Because we decided that she was the youngest character in the piece and obviously overridden with fear.
I also like that she was in yellow.
Yes.
And that her hair, you know, her hair is very, with the little buns on the top, is very, is all very youthful. Yeah, and also there's very clear in Vio too that he's got a very military-esque shape. Yeah, yes, shapes, yes. Shapes, lines, and colors. I think that is something really to highlight when you're moving from your vision in terms of visualization. That's where you start, right? Like shape, right. Lines, and colors.
Right. So we decided that strong diagonals were part of what the society was looking at as their symbols for control. So as you see, there's lots of strong diagonals in the set, and they're mirrored in the costumes. So Rule has very strong diagonals in her costume. Tor has diagonals that meet in the middle, which is an interesting play on the diagonal. Vio, as you already said, has those, you know, strong military kind of a look, and he's got a diagonal in his jacket as well. We decided that Fee, being fearful, did not have diagonal lines. Her lines are very straight. She's got a princess A-line dress with lots of straight lines in it. Her dress and her leggings are the same color. So again, you're looking at that linear, straight down, straight lines. She's got a bar pin on her chest, on her breast, that gives us that military kind of look also, but only a tiny touch of that. Rhee was really kind of fun and interesting because she was somebody that we decided would be in green, and we had to redefine what sweatpants are in the future, because it's got a line in the play, in the text, about her being in sweatpants and looking like she just rolled out of bed. So going with that military theme, we had a two-piece. The pants are actually a Jodhpur pattern. So they kind of come out at the sides in that circular. So we tried to use lines for her as well that were intersected by these bulbous kinds of shape, which gave her this conflict of straight lines following the system and these circular shapes that just sort of blossomed out of these straight lines because she was so unsure. She was questioning. She was jumbled. So she has both lines going on in her costume.
It's just amazing how you can take something and just you can turn it into a story, right? This is a visual, like this what you, everything that's going on here is you are visualizing the story,
right?
And it's not hard to see and guess, right. Characters without hearing them. Wait, is that right? Yes. It's easy to see what the characters are like, even if we don't hear them speak.
Right. I wonder, because we have their names on the front of the boxes as having a place to claim to stand at the window. And when you first looked at the pictures, I thought to myself, I wonder if we didn't have those names on the boxes, if she would be able to identify which character.
Well, I'll tell you this, Vio is dead easy, as is Rhee.
Absolutely.
Actually, you know what? I think I could, because I think that Rhee is very much, just in terms of her physicality as well, and Rule is as dead on that military look. And I would have guessed that the yellow was Fee, because yellow is very fearful.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a great exercise to play. It's like, look, here's five characters. Tell me
who's who
and what their personality is.
Yeah.
Well, and it's the thing I always say. It's one of the things that when I adjudicate, that I talk about. It's like, I should be able to guess your character's personality the instant you walk in the room. Like, there should
before
be
before you open your mouth.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So tell me about the set. So we have this again. We have lots of there's lots of diagonal lines, and there's also some interesting splatters. Tell me about the splatters.
Once I found Vio's, I knew I wanted to do the set in black, and I knew that I wanted metal in the set. And that's actually not metal. It's just paint with, so I have a funny story about the little metal rivets. They're googly eyes.
What?
They're googly eyes that I hot glued onto the pieces. There's at least 350 googly eyes on there. And then I painted over them
with a metallic. Painted them. Oh, my God.
Yes. Aren't they wonderful? I absolutely love them.
Okay, set 101, guys. You want rivet, really easy, cheap rivets.
There you go, cheap rivets.
That is awesome.
I knew I wanted the set black because we had so much color from the characters that I wanted them to be against a black background. I didn't know what else I wanted on the set other than the metal. So at first I had this vision of the black and the metal, and I thought, it's just not working for me. I don't know what it is, but there's, and I didn't know. And I looked and I looked and I racked my brain, and we I opened it up to the students. I just didn't know. We were trying to deal with, elements, with the absence of earth in the set, because I thought that was important to have the absence of earth. And then I found, when we were doing costumes, I found we were just going to put him in red pants. And I was online looking for something else, and I came across these pants with the black splatters, and I went, oh my goodness, have to have those. And then as soon as I got the pants in my hand and held them in my hand when they came, I said, this is what the set is right here. White splatters, right? Blood splatters. So that's how I came upon that.
And it's the kind of thing that when you, because there's layers, like you look at it and it could just be splatters. But if you are of the mind and you're thinking about it, it certainly looks like blood.
Right. I did them laying down so they would not drip. And I keep going back and forth about the drip. Should they drip? Should they not drip? What I don't want it to look like, and this is my fear if I put any more on it, I don't want it to look like I stood in front of it and took a paintbrush with paint and water and threw the paint on it. That's what I don't want it to look like.
Yeah.
Because that's not purposeful. I mean, I was very purposeful about having it laying down and where I put these splatters and the trajectory of the way they were going across the piece. Because that's what would happen if somebody got shot, things would spread and spray.
Yep.
So that was the feeling I wanted from it, rather than the goriness of the dripping. But I keep going back and forth. Do they look enough like blood splatters, or is it okay that they don't? So I don't know.
I'm literally sitting here staring at the picture, going, but that's it. You know what? That's,
I don't know. I always tell my students, theater is not a finished product. It's not ever a finished product. There's always more. There's always more layering that we can do. So maybe it's okay that I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can't, the audience is going to tell you, right? Like the audience is,
right.
Sometimes you can throw something up there and think that it is in crystal clear, your theming and your vision, and people come back and it's all based on their experiences, what they project onto the stage.
Right.
And then, okay, so just as we got one more thing to talk about, and that is the fact that there are two characters who are sort of officers, and I'm just based on the pictures, I'm seeing that they are not characters, they're voices and a screen.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes, that's correct. So I actually had two actors that I wasn't wild about at the beginning, and both of them were unable to do the show. And I breathed a sigh of relief because I wasn't tremendously happy with either person I had in terms of their ability when weighed against the ability of the other five people in the show. And it obviously was supposed to be that way for me, because when they both dropped out literally within 2 days of one another, I breathed a sigh of relief and I said, okay, so now I have to reinvent, recreate, or recast. And I brought it back to the team and I said, hey guys, we've lost these people. What do you think? And someone said, well, it's a futuristic show. Could we do something else with them? And then I started going in the direction of, maybe there's a robotic force on stage. And we explored that avenue a little bit, and that didn't seem quite right. And then I thought about, well, maybe it's kind of like, the voice of God coming, you know, from above, this control coming from above. And that's what we landed on. So I got two actors from the school that were quite good, that were unable to do the show. And I said, hey, will you do these recordings for me? So that's what we did.
I think what's really great to hit on here is this notion of that the director doesn't always have all the answers, you know, in the process, and
isn't that the truth?
Yeah, well, and that this is a community, particularly at the school level, particularly in high school, is that that your students have they have a voice and they have opinions, and that to listen to them sometimes.
Right. You know, and learning doesn't happen if we don't open up that dialogue. So I, that's not to say that, you know, at the end of the day, I'm the director and we're going to go in the direction that I think is best for the overall piece, but we are going to have collaboration. So that's important to me when I deal with students.
Absolutely. This is, thank you very much for talking today. I love first vision. I think that vision is the thing that every teacher out there who doesn't have a lot of experience directing, I talk to them all the time. You know, maybe it's their first play and they're thrown into this experience. And that's the thing that every play should start with, is what do you want to communicate, not only to your actors, but to an audience, mm-hmm. you know? And so what was the response like? What was the response from your audience?
We've had three performances. The audience has tremendous things to say about the piece and how interesting it is and frightening it is and thought-provoking. We get lots and lots of compliments on the performances, as well as the visual, you know, the set and the costumes and the film that Kylan's created at the beginning of the piece, which I did put in the program, by the way, that it was not part of the published work.
Yay.
So thank you. Yes, I absolutely did.
Thank you.
And I will tell you that I did change Tor's pants. They are now purple and they match the color of her purple top. And I'll tell you, she came out on stage that third performance, because I bought them between the second and the third performance. She came out that third night and I went, oh my goodness, that makes all the difference in the world.
Isn't that funny? Eh? So Kelly and I had a conversation because I've seen the pictures and she asked if I had any input. And I said, you know, the pants on Tor just look so similar to the color scheme of Rule, and that it does, that the purple didn't stand out as much as it could. So I love that. I'm glad to hear that purple all the way really.
Oh yeah, she's very purple now.
Yay.
It looks great.
Awesome.
Looks great.
Awesome. Yeah. So thank you so much, Kelly. I think this is, it's great to have conversations about, you know, why do we choose a play? What do we want to communicate with it? And then how do we visualize that? I think that's the key thing, is to bring these thoughts and make them visual. So thank you so much for sharing your insight.
Thank you so much. And thank you for the wonderful play.
Thank you, Kelly. Before we go, let's do some Theater Folk news. So, of course, I want to mention Look Me in the Eye, Look Me in the Eye, a play by me, Lindsay Price, which you can find at theaterfolk.com or in the show notes for this episode, which you can find at theaterfolk.com/episode186. Check it out. There are sample pages you can read. I like it. Oh, there's a selling point for you. I like this play. And because we're talking about directing and vision, I really wanted to mention a professional development course in our Drama Teacher Academy, Drama Teacher Academy. The DTA is just for drama teachers. We have professional development courses, curriculum resources, and community through our professional learning community events and vibrant, that's right, I said vibrant Facebook community group. And one of the great PD courses we have is called Big Picture Blocking, and it focuses how you can take textual analysis tools, create a vision, and apply it to all your stage pictures. Ah, can you imagine as a director having the most amazing stage pictures? Theater is a visual medium. We need to see a story unfold, not be told the story. So you can check it out at dramateacheracademy.com. Check out dramateacheracademy.com for more. And listen, are you doing one of our plays? Are you doing a theater folk play? Are you doing Look Me in the Eye? Well, we want to see a picture. We want to hear about your experience. Your rehearsal videos, 30 seconds, not too long. It's all good. Show us what's going on in the rehearsal, in your classroom. We want to brag about you. We want to put together a production feature about you. We want to share your experience, not only to let everyone know what amazing job you're doing, but also how you approach a play, right? Creating a vision, executing a vision. It gives a lot of value to others to see how something is done. And all you need to do is send that info to us at tfolk@theaterfolk.com. Finally, where oh where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every second Tuesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk and on the Stitcher app. You can also subscribe to the Drama Teacher podcast on iTunes. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.